Hello, everyone. Welcome to another Tech Doctor podcast. This one's going to be just a bit different because I'm going to play for you a speech that I gave in Minneapolis, Minnesota on August 9, 2012. I was speaking at an Access Technology Conference for the Veterans Administration, and I thought this might be an interesting speech to hear, especially if you're interested in sort of the history of access technology, as I have experienced it at least, and then a look at, based on some of those trends and paradigms, where we're going in the future. Hope you enjoy this, and I do apologize for some of the questions at the end being difficult to hear on this audio, but I think you'll be able to make them out if you're interested in that part of the presentation, and I think my answers will be pretty self-explanatory. So long for now, and enjoy the following presentation.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. It's typical for us at Texas A&M to start out by saying the word howdy, and the audience normally says it back, so let's try it. Howdy.
Howdy.
Oh, damn, it sounds just as lame as it does down at Texas A&M. That's all right, though. We'll rise above that. You all did a good job. It's just the howdy thing. I can't quite get on board with it. Anyway, in 1989, when I did my doctoral dissertation, I took a look at how rehabilitation professionals go about making decisions about selecting technology for their clients. And I discovered that typically rehab professionals put about as much processing power into those decisions as they do in selecting the type of toothpaste they buy at the grocery store. They pick the items that have been the most heavily advertised, the ones that are bright, shiny, and blue, and the ones that catch their attention. You guys are the exception to that rule because you're here doing this training. It means that you want to know the details. You want to process the information. You want to make good choices for your clients and your patients. And my hat is totally off to you all for being here and for investing in this work like this. I am so happy to be here and be a part of this conference. It's a really exciting time for me. And another reason that I'm happy to be here, when I first got introduced to the Apple II computer and learned that it could speak, I was introduced to it by a man from the Heinz VA by the name of Harvey Lauer. Any of you all know of Harvey Lauer? Or? Okay, well, Harvey was a great, great pioneer in the area of access technology, and he did tremendous things for people who were wanting to make use of this new technology. I purposefully have chosen not to use visual aids during this presentation. Some will say that it's because I'm lazy, and I wouldn't argue that point, but the real reason is because, as a totally blind person, the whole point of access technology is to overcome the problems of visual information, right? That's why we do this. So I want to invite you all to rest your eyes for an hour. Relax that visual cortex. Step into my world. Use your ears and your brain, if you will, please, to participate in this next hour. It's only fair, right? I mean, let's do it this way. I also am going to have to talk fast because I have a lot to cover and I want to get out a lot of information. So please bear with me, and I hope we'll have some time for questions. I don't think, though, that I can really talk about the present and future of access technology without describing some of the trends and some of the paradigms that have been developed in the past. You know, access technology is important because there's so much visual information in the world. There's so many things are printed. So many things are on computer screens these days. And a blind person simply doesn't have access to that information without access technology. That's why I'm all excited about it. That's why it's important. Because without information, I could not do my job as a psychologist at Texas A&M. There would be no way. I could not live my life the way that I do with my family and keep up with what's going on in the world without access technology. So that's why it's so important, and that's why we do this. You know, it didn't used to be a problem, right? I mean, before the printing press came along, everybody did things orally, and Homer created the Iliad and the Odyssey, no problem. He was a blind guy, but he just told the story. But that all changed when all the material started being in print. And in the early 1800s, Louis Braille did a lot to help out in this area by developing the Braille Code. Again, it was a code that was originally used, or at least parts of it were used, by the military so that officers could communicate with each other at night in the dark. But Louis Braille developed this into a literary code that gave blind people access to information in a way that is readable. Problem is, less than 1% of what's printed every year ever makes it into Braille. Another problem with Braille is that it's very hard to edit hard copy Braille. Access technology has gone a long way toward ameliorating some of those problems with Braille, and I'll be talking more about Braille later. Believe me, I believe Braille is critically important. I think if you're a blind person from birth and you don't learn Braille, you're not really a literate person. You really can't substitute listening to audio or listening to a speech synthesizer for reading and writing because you don't know spelling and punctuation and grammar and things like that. And I believe if you're working with a blinded veteran, if at all possible for that person to be able to learn Braille at least enough to continue being literate as a blind person, I think it's critically important. So I think that what I want to do is just briefly mention some technologies that have been important. In the 1930s, the National Library Service introduced the Talking Book Program, very important to World War I veterans because it gave them a way to get access to books and information that they could listen to. Really, though, the heart of technology as we know it today, that is access technology, is dealing with microprocessor-based devices, which came along in the mid-1970s, about the time I turned 18 years old. So yeah, the word's already out. I'm 56 now, so been doing this for about the last, 38 years or so. And so in the 1970s, some real interesting things started to happen with microprocessor-based technology. And I'm going to pick a company here that was a big hit in the 70s and early 80s just to cite some examples of some trends and paradigms that got developed at that point. The company was called Telesensory Systems Incorporated. What a geeky name. What a wonderful name, though. Telesensory Systems. Who knows what that really means, right? Anyway, we'll call them TSI for short. In about 1975, the early 70s anyway, they came out with a groundbreaking product called the Opticon. A lot of you have probably never seen or heard of an Opticon. Okay. All right. Good. Excellent. Well, the reason that TSI got started, which is a common theme in access technology, is because Dr. James Bliss, the founder of the company, had a daughter who was blind. And he wanted to do something to enable her to read print. Being a talented engineer, he and others designed this device called the Opticon. In case you don't know, it was about the size of a small desktop cassette recorder. You all have heard of cassette recorders, right? We don't have those anymore either. But nonetheless, it was about the size of a cassette recorder. You put your left hand inside the front of the unit and your index finger on a 64-pin array or display that vibrated. With your right hand, you take a camera that looked a lot like a mouse does today with rollers on the bottom. You scan it across a line of print on a page, and as you scan across the print, each character that you cross vibrates its shape on your left index finger. So if you cross over an O, you get a circle. A T, you get a cross. That's how the Opticon worked. Great. Really cool, huh? I mean, pretty exciting stuff. A blind person can read print. What's the problem with it? First of all, it costs more than $3,000. Most blind people are unemployed or underemployed. If they're not a part of the rehab system or the VA, and if they're not approved for this technology, they don't get it. So most people who were blind, I would argue, probably never even saw an opticon. That's one of the big problems we have in access technology. The other problem is, thank God for you guys, the opticon took me about 5 days of intensive training to learn to use. To use an opticon, you pretty much have to be the kind of person that can rub their belly and pat their head at the same time. You have to have good dexterity and good coordination because you have to be able to do one thing with your left hand and another thing with your right hand. And you have to be able to scan that line of print straight across the page, or you're going to wind up with a mishmash of letters and punctuation marks that aren't going to mean anything to you. There's a lot to learn to use an opticon. It is doable. I read some of my first psychology books with the opticon. But it takes a special kind of blind person, dare I say, a blind person who's really motivated, who's really kind of geeky, if you will, because you have to be excited about wanting to read print this way. So a lot of gotchas there, you know, a lot of things to worry about if you want to teach people to use the opticon. But some of us did learn to use it, and it was a valuable tool. TSI then came out with a calculator, four-function talking calculator, telephone keypad, easy for a blind person to use, cost $500, 10 times the price of what a calculator would cost a sighted person, a non-accessible one with a lot more functionality on it. 10 times the cost. Who can afford that? You know, again, if maybe rehab will buy it for you, but it's a problem. Why? Why does it have to cost 10 times the amount? How much has that changed in the last 38 years? We'll talk about that. TSI came out with a Versa Braille. It revolutionized, in a lot of ways, the way we used Braille. Before we had hard copy Braille, we punched on slates and stylus. With the Versa Braille, we had an electronic Braille display, just like this one here. Well, not just like it, but that day's version. Sadly, more similar than I wish it was to what we have today's technology. We still use the same basic Braille display technology. It still costs us around $5,000-$7,000 for these more than 20 cell displays, and so that's a most unfortunate thing. But the Versa Braille really enabled a blind person to do word processing in Braille. You could cut and paste, move text around. You could do all the things that you think of doing with your cursor on a computer screen today, pretty much. Really exciting stuff for Braille. Unfortunately, though, there was a problem in that the Versa Braille didn't have much of a good way to get information out of it. So let's say you completed your assignment for your boss, you wrote that fabulous paper for your teacher, but then how do you get the paper into a format that that boss or that teacher can read? Well, that's where we had a man sitting up in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania, who happened to be married to a woman who was completing her PhD in mathematics in point-set typology, whatever that means, and she was totally blind. And David Holliday talked to his wife, Karen Navy, and said, you know, I think I could write a piece of software that would run on the Apple II computer. Now, both these people graduated from MIT. These are smart people. David said, I think I can write a piece of software on the Apple II that will import the data from your Versa Braille and will then allow it to be translated into regular text, and it can be printed or edited or do whatever you want to do with it at that point. He created a piece of software called Braille Edit, started a company called Raised.Computing, and it was very, very successful. It extended the usefulness of the Versa Braille enormously. David and Karen did something else very important. They created a newsletter for their company called the Raised.Computing Newsletter. And in that newsletter, they published tons of technical information, teaching people how to interface the Apple II and the Versa Braille. I wrote lots of articles for that newsletter, including articles teaching people how to interface the Versa Braille with the brand new, only $50,000 Kurzweil reading machine that had just come out on the market. Ray Kurzweil did a fabulous thing inventing a machine that with a flatbed scanner that would scan a piece of print and do the OCR on it and read it back to you. Wonderful. $50,000, though. Only agencies could afford them. Only universities could afford them. But I discovered, along with others, that we could hook our VersaBrailles up to them and have the Kurzweil send that data that it had just read to the VersaBraille. And so you had a Braille copy of what you read. So you go to the library, read something, take your VersaBraille, plug it in. You can bring a Braille copy of what you read back home with you. Very cool. Very exciting, innovative uses of the technology. 1984 came along, and we thought that, at least we got, that those of us guys and gals who were using the Apple II thought that the world had come to an end because Apple came out with the Macintosh. Believe it or not, it wasn't Bill Gates and Microsoft who had the first graphical user interface with the mouse and the point and click and the icons and all. It was Apple, 1984 with the Macintosh. No reasonable accessibility whatsoever. There was one company that did have an accessible screen reader for the Mac, but it never caught on. It never got popular at all. So we had to move then from the Apple II over to the IBM PC and clones, where a number of people developed screen readers for those technologies. And one of the guys who had been a real pioneer in the Apple software, named Larry Skutkan, created a screen reader for PCs and DOS called ASAP, the Automatic Screen Access Program. It was very innovative because it looked at the screen and it saw what was highlighted or what the attributes were, and that's the information that it spoke. So it spoke the information that a sighted person's eye would have been drawn to on the screen. Very innovative, very creative way to implement access technology. Again, a guy did it because he needed it. Larry's a blind guy. So again, we see the paradigm continues. People invent these things because they need them. 1987, Dean Blasey came out with a device called the Braille and Speak, a wonderful device, pocket-sized note taker. You input your data in on a Braille keyboard, but you get your data back out as synthetic speech. It was cool at the time, and I think people loved it, and it was very popular. I don't think it did any real favors for Braille, though, because it kind of got people thinking, well, I don't really need to read Braille. I just need to be able to write it on a keyboard. And really, I think that's a mistake. We do need to be able to read Braille. But nevertheless, that's not the Braille and Speak's fault. The reason they did it that way was because it made it much more affordable. You know, less than $1,000, you could have a Braille and Speak, and that's something that more people could afford. Well, we went on through the end of the 80s and the 90s, and the screen readers continued to develop, and Windows came along, and screen reader developers jumped on it and made Windows accessible, which people didn't really think was possible, but it was possible. And so then, you know, it was very exciting because pretty quickly we were able to pretty well keep up with most of what other people were using, what the people were using in my office. I was able to do most of what they did with the screen readers, and my hats are off to the pioneers, the GW Micros, the Hinter Joyces, who are now the Freedom Scientifics, I guess. You know, and to those companies that did wonderful things back then. But a really unfortunate thing was happening at the same time. Prices of computers were coming down. That was great. But prices of screen readers were staying the same or going up. So before you knew it, you were paying as much or more for the screen reader as you were for the computer that it ran on. There's something wrong with that picture. Why should it cost a blind person twice as much to access their computer as it does a sighted person? But we accepted that because it's the way it was. So we individuals spent the money. Somehow Vicki and I, when I was a graduate student, found $12,000 to buy a Kurzweil reading machine. I don't know how we did that. I don't know how we came up with that. Not sure we could do it today. I guess we could if we had to. So anyway, but the thing is, you know, the cost was a big issue. Well, in 2005, after lying dormant for 21 years as an accessible platform, Apple woke up and they said, we're going to make all of our technology accessible. We're going to make our computers usable by people who are blind. We've just switched to the Intel processor. We can do it now. And so, like many, I was skeptical, but Apple came forward with their promise. And with each upgrade to the operating system, the Mac has become more and more accessible since 2005. Well, that's cool if you're willing and able to live within the Apple ecosystem, which I am. We have Macs, iPads, iPhones, iPods, Apple TVs, Apple routers, Apple underwear in our house. Okay, that's not, the last one's not quite true, but nonetheless, I'm able to live within that system because of the great accessibility. Not everybody is, and we've heard people at this conference say, you know, they've decided to switch to Android, and I think that's terrific. But Google is still playing catch up in the accessibility arena. They're doing much better with their new Jelly Bean operating system, but they're still not where Apple and iOS is in terms of reliable, easy accessibility at this point. I'm confident they're going to get there, and I'm looking forward to the day that they do, because competition always benefits all of us, in my opinion. So at any rate, Apple did come forth with its accessible technology, and they did something that was perhaps as remarkable. They said, we're not going to charge anything for this access. Everybody gets it. It's built into all of our products. There's no charge. So people buy it and they don't even know they're getting it. You know, they don't care. They don't need it. But it's there for anyone who does need it. And this is the whole idea of universal design, designing access into something, into a product from the ground up, as opposed to it being something that's retrofitted later on. Unfortunately, like a Windows screen reader is. And so when access is designed from the ground up, and when it doesn't cost any extra, in my mind, that begins to level the playing field even a bit more. Now, is Apple technology perfect? No. Is Apple access perfect? No. Do they still have work to do? Yes. We need better access to tables, and we need better access. We need access to Microsoft Office, which is not really Apple's fault. It's really more Microsoft's doing at this point. But so I'm not going to say that it's perfect. It isn't. But it's a significant step, and I think it's a step that is going to have a ripple effect down the road. I think we're going to start seeing Google, as we already are, feel like they need to step up to the built-in accessibility plate. I'm hoping we're going to see Amazon. They need to make their Kindle products accessible and their library accessible. They haven't done it yet. But you know what? For years and years and years, we heard, can't do it. It's just such a tiny market. Doesn't matter. Not important to us as our business model. Well, guess what? There are more and more baby boomers my age who are becoming visually impaired and blind. And there are more and more people who need access to the same access technology that those of us who are already needing it need. The market is growing. And the market seems to be a whole lot bigger, honestly, than what we used to think it was. I don't know who started the rumor, you know, that the market was so small. And that's why this shouldn't or couldn't be done, or why prices had to be so high. But I think the landscape is changing. And that's very exciting, but we're just at the cusp of this. We're just beginning this. We don't know exactly whether or not Amazon's going to step up to the plate, or exactly how Google is going to get up to where Apple has gotten to, but we're seeing that that's likely to happen. Universal design is going to be in all of our homes. We're going to be able to use our accessible iPhone to control our lights and our temperature. It's going to be in our clothing. It's going to tell us how our body's doing, what our temperature is, what our heart rate is, whether or not our blood sugar's low. It's going to be in all of our transportation systems. We're going to have these automobiles that can drive themselves. Now, that's going to be a public relations nightmare to get that one sold, I'll guarantee you. It's going to make people almost as nervous as it made me when our last speaker said, well, at least what I heard him say, I thought I heard him say, was something like, if you speak just before lunch, you got zero credibility. I think I heard him say something. And I got to tell you, that worried me a little bit. Nonetheless, it's going to make people nervous with the changes that are coming. We have to be ready for those changes because they're going to be big changes and they're going to be sweeping and they're going to affect all of us. You know, it's so funny how paradigms shift. A few years ago, we were paying thousands of dollars for screen reading technology and not thinking a thing of it. Today, we can still do that, but even on the Windows side, there's system access now, as you heard from Ricky the other day, that has a screen reader that does a good job. In fact, it's really one of the ones that I use at work on my Windows machine. Does a good job. There's a free screen reader called NVDA, Non-Visual Desktop Access is what it stands for. It's now donationware. You can and should donate something if you use it. But it's pretty powerful. It can work with most of the popular applications that are out there. So you can't tell me that this idea of free or low cost is not making its way into the access technology arena. We got a lot of work to do on Braille. I recently heard a speech by the head of the National Library Service, and she said that her dream while she's head of the National Library Service for the Blind is to make a refreshable Braille display available free of charge to every library patron who wants one. That's a wonderful dream, and I hope it comes true. But we got a long ways to go to get there. We've got to find a way to bring the cost down on some of this technology. But just to show you how the paradigm has shifted, I want to tell you about a remarkable iPhone app that was just released that I was involved in the beta testing of. The app is called Flexi, F-L-E-K-S-Y. It's on sale in the App Store now for $15. And I heard lots of blind people grumbling. I can't believe it cost $15. I'm going to tell you in a minute why it cost $15. But I can't believe it cost $15. When 2 or 3 years ago, they were paying $1,000 or more for accessible technology. But that's how the paradigm has shifted. It ought to cost $5. It ought to be free. Or you know, and I mean, there's always been those of us who have wanted things for free, of course. Who doesn't like a free app or a good deal? But I'm simply making the point that the world is changing. But anyway, this Flexi app addresses a very interesting issue in a really creative way. The Apple touchscreen keyboard was really designed well by Apple, but it was never possible to get your typing speed up really high on that touchscreen if you're a blind person. And the reason is because you have to slide your finger across the screen, locate the letter that you want to input, VoiceOver speaks that character, you then lift your finger, the character gets inputted into the edit field, and VoiceOver speaks the character again. When my sighted wife and son type on their iPhones, do a text message, all they do is touch the letter that they want to enter, and it's immediately entered. And so there's no way that I can do that as fast using the scheme that Apple uses on their keyboard. Well, the Flexi guys said, hey, why don't we use pattern recognition and text prediction? So you just type on the keyboard the way a sighted person would type, and it doesn't matter whether you hit the right letter or not. The only thing that matters is that your word follows the basic QWERTY pattern on the screen. So if you want to type the word banana, you need to hit somewhere in the middle of the bottom to get a B and to the left edge to get an A and just a little bit to the right of where you hit for the B to get an N, so forth, so on. Do you get the idea? It doesn't matter if you get it right. What matters is the pattern. And so Flexi looks at the pattern that you typed, and it says, I bet you want to type the word banana. And you will be amazed at how often Flexi gets it right. And if it gets it wrong, it automatically gives you a list of suggestions that you just flick down through, and the word that you intended will almost always be in that list. And all you have to do is flick to it, because each time you flick to a word, it automatically gets entered into your text along with a space after it. So it's one flick, or two flicks, or three flicks to the desired word, and then you immediately are ready to start typing the next word. And they've given you a way to enter punctuation, capitals, numbers, and so forth. And you also have a way to enter a word manually, just like you do on the Apple keyboard now, if that word is a proper name or something that's not in the Flexi dictionary. I've probably increased my typing speed fourfold using Flexi on the iPhone touchscreen. So it's a very exciting innovation that's really creative and that really works. A couple issues with it. One, Apple will not allow developers to substitute their keyboard for its keyboard. So you have to type your data within the Flexi app. But Flexi's given you buttons to, with a one-touch, have that text that you typed, paste it into the body of an email, or paste it into a text message, or paste it into a tweet for Twitter. So it really is usable, and it really works well. Very creative and very innovative. People are, you know, we're upset about the $15 price, thinking it was too high, but really, a tremendous amount of development and research has gone into this. To this app, and I do think that the $15 price point is reasonable for what you're getting. You know, I tell people, look, you know, give up a pizza, and get Flexi. Things are moving into the cloud. Things are no longer being centered around our desktop machines. And how is access technology going to deal with the cloud? How are we going to deal with Google Docs and SkyDrive and Apple's iCloud? We've got to address those issues. And right now, some of those systems aren't really all that accessible, but we're going to really be left behind. In fact, Microsoft is going to a Microsoft Office version in the cloud. We've got to find ways to keep accessing this information. Good news for you guys is there is always, always, always going to be a need for training. Training is perhaps the most important and the most misunderstood aspect of access technology. Way, way, way too often, people end up with technology that sits on their desk or sits on their shelf because they don't know how to use it, or they only know how to partially use it, or because they don't use it enough to get engaged with it, to be passionate about it. And that's really a big part of the role that you all have to play, is to help people get to the point where they're comfortable enough to want to use it, to see what it can really do for them, to feel passionate about it, to really understand that this is the best shot we have at this point to level the playing field. This is our best shot at it in this century right now, is access technology. Because everything out there is visual, as I started out by saying, and we've got to find a way to make that information accessible. I talk about these things at length and review technologies and interview people who are experts in this field on my podcast. It's called the Tech Doctor Podcast. That's TECH space DOCTOR. You can find it on iTunes. You can find it on iBlink Radio, as Ricky talked about the other day. You can go to my website, which is dr-carter.com, drcarter.com with a dash. You can go there and access the podcast that way. I will be posting this presentation within about a week or so up on the website. It will, of course, then automatically be available in iTunes and the various places that I have mentioned, and I want you to feel free to access it and make use of it in any way that you see fit, because that's why I do it. That's what it's there for. It's, of course, free. You may have figured out by now, I like low cost and free. I'm pushing for that. All right, so I've skipped a lot of things and run through a lot of things quickly, and I don't know whether I've bombarded you with too much stuff, but let me stop for now and see. Is there any time left at all for questions? Or
yeah, we've got about 5-10 minutes still. So okay. Questions, I think that
would
be great.
So if people want to make comments or have questions about the things that I've had to say, please don't raise your hand because you'll be wasting your time. But please let me know and let's have a little dialogue here.
Dr. Carter, back here, Luke Patterson.
Yes, sir.
I just got a question on your opinion on this. We all know how important, you know, Braille and tactile communication is, particularly with literacy for kids and the things that you've mentioned. But I really feel like text and Braille and tactile and speech is a lot more electronic and different now. You know, even in the text world, once upon a time, you know, we were using cave paintings. Then we decided, we're going to etch this stuff in stone.
Yep.
And then we evolved, and I think the same thing is actually happening with tactile communications and speech. And so it becomes kind of a technology literacy thing. In order for people that are totally blind or to keep up with their peers, like what my kids are doing, what do you think is going to happen? I mean, I think we're really kind of moving towards a refreshable Braille, or more of an electronic kind of Braille and tactile communication rather than, we're always going to need that, but I mean, clearly it's changing. So where do you think it's going to go?
When I was at the National Federation of the Blind convention a couple weeks ago in Dallas, I met up with Brian Blasey, who's the son of Dean Blasey that I mentioned, who the inventor of the Braille and Speak. And Brian took me up to his hotel room, scared me a little bit, and and showed me something that he is working on along with a guy named Mike Romeo, who is a genius in Access Technology hardware. He invented the Romeo Braille Embosser many years ago. But he and Mike Romeo have developed a multi-line refreshable Braille display, which right now can display about 4, maybe 6 lines of information at a time. And that is, it's a long way from being in production, but it really opens up the world for displaying the kinds of information that people are needing these days, as you're talking about, on the digital displays. So we are seeing progress in that area, but I think we really have to keep Braille alive. It would have been much more difficult for me to have done this presentation today if I wouldn't have had my notes here on my Braille display. Now, there are people who can listen to their notes with an earphone in one ear and make a presentation while they're listening to their notes and keep going and have it all flow well. But I guess I'm not really one of those people. Or at the very least, it's way easier to do and way more doable with Braille. So your question is a great one, and I think there are exciting things coming, but we've got a ways to go. I use the Mac and Safari and Google Chrome browsers to do virtually all of the browsing that I do on the internet. And Safari 6 is vastly improved in Mountain Lion in terms of its operation with VoiceOver. It's much faster, much more stable, a lot less busy messages. I'm really excited to see a new life come to VoiceOver, but that's pretty much what I use. I also browse on the iPhone as well. We've got to. The prices of Braille displays are coming down to some extent, but unfortunately the ones that are coming down are the really small ones, the 12 cell, the 14 cell, the 18 cell displays, and they're fine for accessing a mobile device or for reading emails, but when it comes to really reading longer things, books and that kind of thing, I'd so much prefer a longer display. The one I'm using here is a 32 cell display, and that's a pretty good length for reading longer material. Right.
So I use like Braille cue cards.
Yes.
Sometimes.
Excellent.
Dr.
Yes.
Do you use Mac in your professional work as well? I understand that you just spoke about Safari and how much you like it. And do you find Mac the overall more accessible?
Wow, what a question. In my office, I take my MacBook to work with me every day, and I continue to do my internet browsing, Twitter, tweeting, and my email on the Mac. But my office is primarily a Windows-based environment, and we do use Microsoft Office. We use a web-based system for entering all of our chart information on the clients that we worked with, and that's pretty much a Windows system. So I use both at work, and as far as which one is more accessible, honestly, it really depends on the task that you need to do. I wish it was equal across the board, but it's gotten so crazy these days. In the Windows environment, it's not even enough now a lot of times to have one screen reader, because some screen readers do some things better than other screen readers. Some work really well with Office. Some work really well with the web. And it's not necessarily the same screen reader that does it all. And so, I find not only do I switch back and forth between the Mac and Windows, but I switch back and forth between multiple screen readers. And if that won't drive you crazy, try to remember all the commands for all the different screen readers. It's any other questions or comments? It has been an honor to be here with you all. Thank you so much for having me.